Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, the weekend edition, Saturday, January 1st, 2022. Energy Industry Sees Rise in Costs by Mella McEwen. Continued expansion of the state's oil and gas sector was obvious in the fourth quarter energy survey issued by the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. But what was also obvious in responses from the survey is that companies are facing intensifying cost pressures. Those cost pressures are the theme of the fourth quarter survey, Kunal Patel, business economist with the bank, told the Reporter Telegram. The survey shows costs are rising. The question is, how will the industry manage that? The survey found costs rose sharply for a third straight quarter, with input costs for oil field service firms climbing to a record 69.8% from the record high of 60.8% set in the third quarter. Only one of 44 service companies participating in the survey reported lower input costs. For exploration and production firms, finding and development costs rose to a record 45% from 33% in the third quarter, while lease operating expenses jumped to a record high of 42% from 29.5% in the previous quarter. Patel noted that service firms reported improvement across the board, though the pace of growth for some indicators slowed. For example, the index of prices received for services was positive but fell to 30% from 42%, while equipment utilization edged up to 51% from 48%. Operating margins also remained positive but sank to 11.5% from 21.8% in the third quarter. One service company representative responded that the company is seeing an across-the-board increase in demand for services, but we are fighting to get back to acceptable margins for our products and services. Inability to hire qualified workers was a frequent comment through the labor market, though the labor market showed further growth in the fourth quarter. The employment index remained positive, though it dropped to 12% from 14% in the fourth quarter. Service sector hiring continued to dominate. Patel noted that employees are working more hours, though the employee hours index was essentially unchanged at 18. The wages and benefits index did move to a record high of 37% from 30% in the third quarter. Positive news in the survey was that business activity rose to 42%, pointing to strong growth, and six-month corporate outlooks improved. Respondents forecast West Texas Intermediate prices will end 2022 at $75 a barrel. Price forecasts ranged from $50 to $125, and Henry Hub gas prices will end the year at $4.06 per MTU. Approximately 75% of the respondents expect to increase capital spending slightly or significantly in 2022. Patel pointed out that the number of respondents expecting significant increases in spending was higher than in the fourth quarter of 2020. Despite the positive outlooks, Patel stressed that uncertainty remains among industry executives, who cited uncertainty over demand, the COVID-19 pandemic, and the regulatory environment. There were more comments this time about the regulatory environment. Takeaways from the survey special question. A majority of firms are using an oil price at or above $60 for budgeting purposes. The average response across all firms was $64. 49% of exploration and production companies said that growing production was their primary goal for 2022. Almost two-thirds of large E&P companies reported having plans to reduce carbon and methane emissions. Larger firms, which make up a sizable amount of U.S. oil production, are much more likely to have these plans in place than smaller firms. On average, support service firms expect the price of their primary service or product to increase by 8.5% in 2022, while input prices are expected to rise roughly 10%. Increasing demand for their service or product was cited as the main factor that will influence the change in their firm's selling price. 95% of executives said they believe countries will be unable to meet their 2030 commitments for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. PBPA, be prepared for winter weather. By Mella McEwen. With local temperatures forecast to fall to low 20s or lower Saturday and Sunday, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association is reminding members of new laws requiring preparation for winter weather. At this time, we want to point your attention again to the notice to operators provided by the Railroad Commission earlier this year in advance of this and future winter weather. We have not heard of specific challenges or issues from our members at this time, but stand ready to assist if necessary. The association wrote, after Winter Storm Uri, the Texas legislature adopted several pieces of legislation aimed at defining critical assets and ensuring power continues to flow to critical oil and gas facilities. On November 30th, the RRC formally adopted Rule 3.65, referring to critical designation of natural gas infrastructure, and the amended 3.107 relating to penalty guidelines for oil and gas violations, and adoption of corresponding forms C13 and C1X. The rule became effective on December 20th, and the deadline to submit the form CID or CIX, as well as their attachments, are due January 15th. The RRC is also now hosting online critical infrastructure training, which includes video training on filing forms C1X and attachments and C1D and attachments. The RRC is also hosting in-person training sessions on new critical designation of natural gas infrastructure rule requirements for operators and local distribution companies. A session in Midland is scheduled for January 6th at the Barber and George H.W. Bush Convention Center. The PBPA's Critical Infrastructure Center is now live online and contains a multitude of resources as members prepare for winter and compliance with the new rules. Holidays, a short rest for Tall City. Midland to see big changes in 22. By Stuart Doreen. Following a jam-packed 2021, it would be hard to blame Midlanders if they are ready for a break. Still, it appears 2022 won't provide rest for the weary. Governments will be ready to return to normal, but 2022 also provides Midlanders ample opportunity to decide on the direction of government. Midland ISD, the City of Midland, and Midland County will be among the entities with elections. Even if there wasn't a local election of note, there will be plenty of region and statewide elections. A new state senator for Midland, Odessa, Midlanders will have an opportunity to cast a ballot there. The same will be said for governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general, which might be the most competitive of them all. COVID will again be in the community. Will there be a higher death tolls of 2020 and 2021? That's tough to forecast, as are the total number of cases. At the beginning of 2020, few people would have known about Delta or Omicron. Still, there will be things we do know will take place, and here's a first look at things to look forward to in 2022. City elections. 2021 told us there wasn't much to the power of incumbency. Two of the three incumbents in competitive elections were voted out. This year, the mayor and representatives of District 3 and District 4 will have their turn with the electorate. Those elected officials are Mayor Patrick Payton, Councilman Jack Ladd, and Councilwoman Lori Blome. For those on the commissioner's court, there are three spots up for grabs. Because Democrats won't have a candidate in November, all three will be decided in the Republican Party's primary. The seats are up for Precinct 2, 4, and County Judge. All three have competitive races. MISD. Three of the seven seats will be on the board in November. They are District 3, District 5, and District 6. Rick Davis stated he will not seek re-election. Will there be another bond election in 2022? It's difficult to get a read whether the MISD board is ready to pull the trigger on bond election. Midlanders have been told facilities and grade reconfiguration have been issues. There also are concerns whether the current administration needs more time to show what it can do and whether overall sentiment about bonds is good. Midland County voters nixed a tax election in November. Greenwood ISD voters also handily voted down a bond referendum. Also, initial polling in Odessa shows no appetite for a bond referendum for Ector ISD. Every 2 years, public high schools across Texas go through the University Interscholastic League's realignment process to determine classification and districts. That happens in February. Will the district that includes Legacy and Midland High change? That could happen if schools around Lubbock, Abilene, or San Angelo show enrollment changes one way or another. Also, area schools, especially those with increasing enrollments, might be impacted. A direct flight to Austin has been announced by Southwestern, will return in March. Southwest announced that service to and from Texas' capital will return for the first time since 2009. The City of Midland has stated the tentative schedule for the flights, include a departure out of Midland at 6:30, arriving in Austin at 7:30. The return flight is scheduled to leave Austin at 7:50 p.m., arriving in Midland at 8:55 p.m. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center turned 10 in November and will spend much of 2022 celebrating. Acts already on the calendar include Ron White, REO Speedwagon, Foreigner, Tim Allen, and the center's 10-year anniversary concert on May 5th, Jimmy Buffett, and the Corral Reefer Band. Airport boardings and parking revenues soar, by Stuart Doreen. It appears the number of people flying out of Midland International is basically back to pre-COVID levels. The City of Midland reported this month that 49,000 boarded an airline during the month of November. That total was more than any November on record except 2019. That includes two of the three previous busiest at Midland International. With more passengers flying Southwest, American Eagle, and United, that meant other metrics are up, including fuel sales. Parking revenues increased even more. The city reported $463,000 collected in November through the 2 months this fiscal year. Southwest Airlines collected 44% of those flying out of Midland International. That was higher than October, when the airline was 43%. American Eagle was second with 28% of the passengers. Texas metros with significant energy activity to lead growth, by M. Ray Perryman. Metropolitan areas across Texas have regained most of the jobs lost due to COVID-19. While growth that would have otherwise occurred has been foregone or at least delayed, the long-term outlook remains quite positive. More than three-fourths of all jobs across the state are currently found in the state's seven largest metropolitan areas, a proportion which has been rising steadily over time. Through 2045, the Houston and Dallas areas will likely each account for approximately one-fourth of the net new jobs, with the Greater Austin, San Antonio, and Fort Worth regions each contributing between 8 and 9% of the total gain. The fastest-growing metropolitan centers, as measured by percentage changes in jobs, are expected to be those with significant concentrations of energy activity, though some of these are coming back from steep initial declines and lingering vestiges of COVID-19, including Odessa, Midland, San Angelo, and Tyler. The smaller MSAs are projected to equal or exceed the more rapidly expanding large metro areas such as Dallas and Austin. Employment in the Fort Worth area is likely to increase at 1.68% annual pace, while El Paso is projected to experience modest job growth through 2045 at a rate of 1.5%. the Houston area, MSA, economy has recently struggled due to sluggish recovery in the energy sector, but these problems are likely to resolve over time. Employment in the area is expected to expand at an annual rate of 1.7% through 2045. The McAllen MSA is projected to see 1.7% annual job growth through 2045. The San Antonio MSA's economy expansion pace is likely to be maintained, with employment anticipated to rise at 1.7%. Texas' smaller metropolitan areas are also projected to enjoy notable gains over time. As mentioned, areas with significant energy activity are projected to see particularly strong job growth as the industry recovers from pandemic-related demand decreases and other issues. Sherman is also expected to outpace the state rate of expansion. Most of the other smaller MSAs are predicted to advance by 1.5% or more through 2045. With residual effects of the coronavirus and the emerging Omicron variant may cause issues in some areas over the next few years, the Texas metropolitan areas are likely to see notable long-term expansion. The largest population centers are projected to generate the highest numbers of net new jobs, but several smaller metros will likely keep pace in terms of relative increases. These are challenges, to be sure, but the overall prospects are quite encouraging. Big Bend among best parks for winter trips. When it comes to national parks, winter is actually one of the best seasons to visit. Cooler temps mean fewer people, which is why USA Today is rounding up a list of the best national parks for families to visit this winter, and a Texas park made the list. Coming in at number 3 is the popular Big Bend National Park, the largest national park in Texas. The Texas National Park sprawls over 800,000 acres in West Texas near Alpine. Big Bend is a hiker's paradise with more than 150 miles of desert and mountain trails to explore. As USA Today says in the December 28th article, the winter months are full of sunny days and mild temperatures at Big Bend, which makes it one of the top national parks to visit in the winter, and often a more enjoyable experience than during the blazing summer heat. Big Bend sits on a curve of the Rio Grande that cuts high-walled canyons throughout the region. The publication notes that families can enjoy the scenic Ross Maxwell Scenic Drive through the Chisos Mountains. There are also plenty of hiking opportunities, such as the Santa Elena Canyon Trail. And since it's winter, visitors can also warm up by taking a dip in the natural hot spring. There's a half-mile hike to a 105-degree natural pool adjacent to the Rio Grande. Clara Mize Gleghorn passed away on December 22nd. A memorial service will be held on Wednesday, January 5th at 11:30 at the Hope Community Church in Midland. Family visitation and lunch will follow the service in the Fellowship Hall. Don Dunbar Jr. passed away on December 28th. A memorial service will be Monday, January 3rd, in the Magnolia Chapel of Corley Funeral Home. A visitation will take place an hour prior to the service. Burial will follow at Oakwood Cemetery. Funeral services are under the direction of CorleyFuneralHome.com. Gloria Galvin passed away on December 24th. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, January 3rd at Nally Picklum Welsh Funeral Home, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Raymond Scooter Jenkins passed away on December 21st. Interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park and celebration of life will be determined later. To offer your sympathy at this difficult time, donations gratefully accepted by the Permian Basin Area Foundation. Cindy B. Jenkins Scholarship Fund. Shirley Marie Fagley passed away on December 9th. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Monday, January 3rd at Teen Challenge in Midland. Memorials may be given to the Teen Challenge in memory of Shirley. Funeral services are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Thomas Allen Fields passed away on December 8th. Interment will be held at Fort Sam Houston National Cemetery in the coming weeks. In lieu of flowers, we ask that a donation be made to the American Cancer Society. Jean Ellen Beach passed away on December 26th. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home in Midland.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, January 1st. Quick hits. Rodney Carrington, Let Me In. The Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788, Midland, will present Rodney Carrington, Let Me In, at 7 p.m. January 6th. Doors open at 6 p.m. For tickets or information, visit wagnerknoll.com. Joe Coy Funny is Funny World Tour. The Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788, Midland, will present Joe Coy Funny is Funny World Tour at 8 p.m. January 8th. Doors open at 7 p.m. For tickets or information, visit wagnerknoll.com. What's Going On? Singing Cadets Concert. The Friends of Midland Aggie Moms Club has scheduled a Singing Cadets Concert at 6 p.m. January 9th at the First United Methodist Church, 300 North Main Street, Midland. Mama Mia Sing Along, the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788, will present Mama Mia Sing Along at 7:30 p.m. January 13th. The Mama Mia Sing Along event is a free event. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. For tickets or information, visit wagnerknoll.com. Concerts, the Hacienda Event Center, 12160 Texas 191 Frontage Road. Midland has scheduled the following events. January 14th, Camila y Carla Bru con Invitado Especial, El Chaparro Quachenegger. January 21st, Gerardo Ortiz, La Adictiva, La Fiera de Oinaga y Impacto Sinolens. February 11th, Jay Wheeler. Choice School application period is now open. The Choice School application period for Ector County ISD parents and students runs through January 15th. For high school students, there is no application deadline, as the three campuses are filled on a first-come, first-served basis. Parents can find information and the online application at www.ectorcountyisd.org/choice. The list of ECISD's choice schools includes elementary schools, Austin Montessori Blackshear Health and Fitness, Cameron Dual Language Gale Pond Alamo STEAM Academy, Extended Year Hayes STEAM Academy, Milam Visual and Performing Arts, Reagan Academic, Travis Career and Leadership Academy, Zavala Community and Career Academy. Middle schools, Ector College Prep Middle School. High schools, George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, OC Tech's Odessa Collegiate Academy. George Lopez OMG High Comedy Tour has been scheduled at 8 p.m. January 22nd at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788, Midland. Doors open at 7 p.m. For tickets or more information, wagnerknoll.com. West Texas Wedding Expo. West Texas Bridal has scheduled a West Texas Wedding Expo from noon to 4 p.m. January 30th, Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. There will be more than 100 booths in attendance, as well as three fashion shows. For more information, call 432-556-9294. or 432-934-6774. Obituary and death notice from the Odessa American for Saturday. Samuel P. Cervantes was born October 7, 1933, in San Angelo. He went to be with his Lord and Savior on December 18th at the age of 88, surrounded by his family. He is survived by son Steve Cervantes of Odessa, daughter Linda Barragan of Odessa, brother John Cervantes of Lubbock, sisters Esther and Joe Mendoza of Friona, Texas, Ruth and Jim Rupp of San Angelo, 9 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-granddaughter. He is preceded in death by his wife of 52 years, Josepha Cervantes, son Ernest Cervantes, daughter-in-law Paula Beagle Cervantes, mother Virginia Cervantes, and father Israel Cervantes. A memorial service will be held on January 3rd at 7 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held on January 4th at 2 p.m. at Templo Buenas Nuevas, located on 5th and Vine, with Wanda Hill Varela and Deanna Hill Galindo officiating. Family request any flowers be sent in his favorite color, orange. Luz Esther Rodriguez, 73, of Odessa, died Monday, December 27th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. January 3rd at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Hello, this is Cindy, reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, January 2nd. 3 Odessa attorneys want 244th bench. District Judgeship Open Following Rush's Retirement by Kim Smith. With 244th District Judge James Rush retiring after 10 years on the bench, Ector County voters will have to choose one of 3 candidates running in March's Republican primary, all of whom tout their years of experience. It's winner-take-all as there is no Democrat running. With 3 candidates, there is the possibility of a runoff between the top 2 candidates following the primary. Retired Odessa Municipal Court Judge Dennis Jones, 62, former Ector County Attorney Cindy Weir Nutter, 59, and longtime civil attorney Lori Ruiz Crutcher, 40, all hope to take the bench to preside over a court that handles criminal and civil matters. Jones, who was born and raised in Lufkin, first stepped into a courtroom as a child. My dad was the county judge in Angelina County for a very long time, so I kind of grew up around the courthouse, Jones said. My very best friend through high school and later my roommate at college, his father was the one district judge at that time in Angelina County. He and I would rush after class if they had a good, juicy murder trial or something going on. We'd run after class to watch the last couple of hours of testimony. Jones obtained a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Stephen F. Austin University and spent 5 years as a police officer in Lufkin before deciding to go to law school. He obtained his law degree from South Texas College of Law in Houston and became licensed in May 1989. He spent time working as a prosecutor in Angelina County before moving to Odessa in July 2005 to take a job as a prosecutor under Ector County Attorney Kathy Lynch. About a year and a half later, he was appointed as the Odessa Municipal Court Judge, a position he held for more than 12 years. Since retiring in 2019, Jones has been handling family and criminal defense matters. His longtime dream of becoming a judge rekindled when he heard Rush was retiring. It was on a Friday when I found that out and the wheels began turning that weekend, Jones said. On Monday, I prepared the paperwork and Tuesday, I filed. Jones believes he's uniquely qualified to take over Rush's caseload, having worked on both sides of the criminal arena. Plus, he's got all of those years behind the bench and taken courses at the National Judicial College in Reno, Nevada. There'd be no learning curve with me. I'd be ready to go day one, he said. If elected, Jones said he would work hard and efficiently. His father always drilled into him the importance of public service and being accountable to taxpayers. He hopes voters will recognize the value he could bring to the bench. I'm not going to run any type of negativity campaign. I hope the voters will see I'm the most qualified candidate and they will vote for me. But I'm not going to say anything bad about my opponents, Jones said. I know some people may find that odd, but I'm just not that type of person. I'm not going to run a negative campaign. I'm just going to lay out my qualifications out there and hope the public will vote for me as the most qualified candidate. Weir Nutter. Weir Nutter moved to Odessa from Midland in the fifth grade. The Permian High School graduate obtained her bachelor's degree in business from the University of Texas Permian Basin and her law degree from Texas Tech. She clerked for the late U.S. District Judge Lucius Bunton III before spending time in private practice, handling primarily civil cases, but the occasional criminal defendant. She later went to work in the Ector County District Attorney's Office, prosecuting career criminals and defendants accused of sex crimes and crimes against children. Weir Nutter went back into private practice after several years and began representing children and their parents in child protection court. After spending 4 years as the Ector County attorney, she returned to that type of work in 2013 and handled such matters in 9 counties. In addition to her 31 years as an attorney, Weir Nutter has also spent 27 years as a mediator. She has long wanted to be a judge and said her experience makes her an excellent candidate. She's appeared in federal and state courts, including at the appellate level. I have practiced before numerous judges throughout Texas, and I've observed the type of demeanor and the type of courtroom that promotes the process. Some hinder the process, in my opinion, and I want to be one that promotes the process, Weir Nutter said. Too many times she's seen judges make themselves the center of attention, arrive late, delay rulings, and fail to keep up with the ever-changing law, she explained. She's also seen judges make inconsistent rulings. I think lawyers should look forward to coming to my courtroom because they know they're going to be able to do their job, and they know they're not going to have a judge inserting themselves into the process. If elected, Weir Nutter said she would encourage parties to resolve the issues amongst themselves whenever possible and to make the most of the party's time. She dislikes it when parties have to wait around before taking the stand, for example. She gets misty-eyed thinking about her late father-in-law, who gave her his judicial robe prior to his death in January 2020, after 21 years on the bench. I have a real passion for justice. I have all my life. And the judge guides the process and ensures that the law is followed, that everyone is treated respectfully, and that justice is achieved, she said. This particular court is special to me because my father-in-law was Judge Joe Connolly, and he was a judge in this court. Even before I met my husband, he had guided me and was just such a hero of mine. He was a good judge. I think he'd be very proud. Although Weir Nutter lost her position as Ector County attorney following a highly contentious race, she looks back at that time frame and thinks of it as a small bump in the road. She had been accused of failing to report employee compensation time to the county and giving out more comp time than county policy allowed. After a months-long investigation by the Texas Attorney General's Office and the Texas Rangers, an Ector County grand jury absolved her of any criminal activities, choosing instead to criticize county policy in a rare written report. I haven't had anyone actually comment on that. It was all resolved. It was all debunked. I had the opportunity after that to speak with the Republican Party, show them documents, show them the truth, Weir Nutter said. I think it was a shame that happened. I think some people, including reporters, got caught up in a storyline, and I think it's a shame. I'm grateful the truth came out. The truth always comes out. Ruiz Crutcher is a native of Round Rock. She obtained her bachelor's degree in English literature from the University of North Texas and her law degree from Texas Tech. She remembers watching Law and Order on TV with her grandfather. As a young person, I was always fascinated by the legal system and how it worked, Ruiz Crutcher said. I wanted to help people, and I thought that would be a very honorable way to help people. Prior to moving to Odessa in 2007 to work in the Child Support Division of the Texas Attorney General's Office, she was a legal assistant in a criminal defense law firm. She joined the law firm of Atkins, Holman, Jones, Peacock, Lewis, and Lyon in 2008 and is now a partner. I have a general business practice which involves disputes between business parties, essentially, she said. It could be contract disputes, employee-employer disputes. I also practice general business law, assisting clients with their general business needs in terms of any formation, mergers, and acquisitions. I also have experience in banking law. Although she's not practiced criminal law, Ruiz Crutcher said as a legal assistant, she helped draft motions and appellate briefs and assisted in trial preparations. However, she also pointed out that new judges have taken the bench in the past with more experience on one side than the other, and it's not hampered them. It's important for our courts to be well-rounded, so the fact that I'm not a criminal defense attorney is actually a positive for our judiciary, Ruiz Crutcher said. I think having a business background will be beneficial to our court because I'm able to handle and know business cases, which in turn helps the court move more efficiently. She continued, being a quick learner, I have no doubt I'll be able to learn criminal law rather quickly so I can merge the two and run the court efficiently. She's been thinking about running for a judgeship for a few years, Ruiz Crutcher said. I think Ector County deserves a well-respected judiciary, and when I found out Judge Rush was not going to run for re-election, I thought that I was the best candidate for that position, she said. The job of a good judge is one of good judgment. I think I possess good judgment. I'm a good attorney. I'm a hard worker. Ruiz Crutcher wants voters to know she understands the importance of being fair, impartial, and mindful of people's time. Our citizens deserve that. They deserve for the judges to thoughtfully consider the matters that are presented before them, she said. I think it's important that judges follow the law. They're not there to legislate from the bench or create the law. The job is to follow the law, so I think it's important for our judges to be conservative in the sense they do just that. They follow the law. If elected, she'll definitely work hard, Ruiz Crutcher said. Professionally, I'm in my productive prime, and so my intention, if elected, is to work hard, be in this position for the long term, and continue to serve the community if they allow me to, she said. The last day to register to vote is January 31st. Early voting begins February 14th and ends February 25th. Quick hits. Hope for the Heart. A 6-week support group for adults has been scheduled from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesdays, January 4th through February 8th at Hospice of Odessa, 219 West 4th Street. This series of classes offers encouragement, education, and an opportunity to share your stories, struggles, and successes in a safe, compassionate place. There are no time limits on when a loss occurred or the circumstances surrounding it. There is no charge to participate. For more information, call 432-653-1737 or visit hospiceofodessa.org. Obituary and death notices from the Odessa American for Sunday. Jack Calvin Frost was born on November 8, 1938, in Pecos, to Jim and Anise Frost. He was the oldest of three boys. He was married to Colleen Watson. Jack is survived by his three children, James Hayden Frost, John Mark Frost, and Crystal Frost Rogers, son-in-law Keith Warren Rogers, four grandchildren, two great-grandchildren, brother Jim Frost, sister-in-law Emily Frost, and numerous nieces and nephews. The family will receive friends for visitation on Tuesday, January 4th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Frank Wilson Funeral Directors. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, January 5th at 10 a.m. at Northside Baptist Church, followed by burial at Sunset Memorial Gardens. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the West Texas Food Bank at wtxfoodbank.org, Gideon's International at gideons.org, or Paisano Baptist Encampment at paisanoencampment.org. Oscar Manuel Gonzalez, 60, of Odessa, died Friday, December 24th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Friday, January 7th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. The family will receive friends for visitation on Thursday, January 6th from 5 to 9 p.m. at the funeral home with a rosary at 7 p.m. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Danny Eugene Yeager, 75, of Odessa, died Friday, December 24th in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. January 4th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Efrain Sainz Suarez, 66, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 26th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. on Thursday, January 6th at Faith Fellowship Church. The family will receive friends for visitation on Wednesday, January 5th from 5 to 9 p.m. at the funeral home. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Ponciano B. Torres Jr., 70, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 26th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, January 4th at St. Anthony Catholic Church. Burial will follow at the Los Angeles section of Ector County Cemetery. The family will receive friends for visitation on Monday, January 3rd from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. at the funeral home with a rosary at 7 p.m. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson, Funeral Directors of Odessa. Donald Raymond Winkler, 71, of Odessa, died Monday, December 27th in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. January 5th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Sunday. Jerry Don Cadell died surrounded by his family at home in Lubbock at 2:10 a.m. on December 27th after battling pancreatic cancer. Jerry was born to Elmer George and Wilma Jean Cadell on May 11th, 1949 in Amarillo. He is survived by his wife Leanne Cadell of Lubbock, his children Jeremy Cadell, Lindsay Sloan, and husband Tanner Sloan, and Ryan Elam. Seven grandchildren, his sister Sherry and husband Guy Gilson, his brothers Bill and wife Judy, Larry and wife Cindy, Ronnie and wife Karen, Tom and wife Linda, and Brian Eiler. Per Jerry's wishes, there will be no memorial. Those who wish to honor his memory may make a donation to the Wounded Warrior Project. Jeffrey Lynn Raines of Gardendale passed away on December 28th in Odessa. Visitation will be from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., Monday, January 3rd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. Tuesday, January 4th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, with a celebration of life to follow at the family's home in Gardendale. Jeff was born in Hobbs, New Mexico, to Winford and Sharon Rains on July 20, 1969. Jeff is preceded in death by his grandparents, Glenn and June Rains, Earl and Opal Hurd, and his father, Winford Rains. Jeff is survived by his wife, Joy Rains, his children, Griffin Rains and girlfriend, Kaylee Brown, Jacob Rains, Jackson Rains, Bailey Krause, his brother, Joe and Vaughn Rains, and his mother, Sharon Rains, as well as numerous aunts, uncles, cousins, and friends. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Saul Ramirez, age 73, of Odessa, passed away in peace, surrounded by his family on Thursday, December 23rd. Saul was born in 1948 in El Tolque, Tecolte, Chihuahua, Mexico, to the late Ramona Lujan and Irineo Ramirez. He leaves behind his three children, Christina and husband Jack, Saul and Megan, and Neri and Karima, five grandchildren and one great-grandson. He is also survived by his six siblings, Cosme, Mary, Aaliyah, Sylvia, Araceli, and Heriberto. Saul will also be forever remembered by numerous nieces, nephews, and extended family and dear friends. He is preceded in death by his wife, Aurora, and both his parents. Public viewing will be at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home on Tuesday, January 4th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. A Mass of Christian Burial will be celebrated Wednesday, January 5th, at 1 p.m. at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church, followed by burial at the Odessa 2 section of Ector County Cemetery. Jeffrey Castile, 38, passed from this life on December 14th in Lubbock. He was born on January 3, 1983, in Kermit, to Frankie and Shauna Castile. Those left to cherish his memories are both his parents, Grandmother Nancy Thurlow, brother Trevor Castile and Jessica of Wink, Sister Kendra Castile of Midland, two nieces and one nephew, as well as numerous aunts and uncles. He is preceded in death by daughter Jaren, grandfather Greg Williams, and paternal grandparents Lee and Roy Lee Castile. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Condolences to the family may be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. Peggy Duncan Chambers, 77, of Odessa, passed away on Friday, December 4th. Peggy was born in Levelland, Texas, on July 20, 1944, to the late Joe Bailey Ponder and Edna Ponder. Peggy is survived by son Larry Hartzell, daughters Loretta Hartzell, Elizabeth Mitchum, Peggy Snyder, Dina Glenn, and Amada Mitchell, brother David Ponder, sister Beth Sutherland. Peggy is preceded in death by her parents, Edna and Joe Ponder, husbands Ronnie Duncan and Joel Chambers, son Sam Brock, brothers Joe Lee Ponder, Charlie Ponder, and Butch Ponder, sisters Molly Wittenberg and June Huckel. A visitation will be held on Wednesday, January 5th, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. A chapel service will be Thursday, January 6th at 1 p.m. The burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Maria Ann Ochoa Alvarado, 56, of Fort Stockton, died Sunday, December 26th in El Paso. Funeral service was scheduled for 10 a.m. December 31st at Heritage Funeral Home of the Big Bend. Richard Martinez officiated. Arrangements were by Heritage Funeral Home Big Bend of Fort Stockton. J. Jr. Doyle, 99, of Odessa, died Tuesday, December 28th in Odessa. Graveside is scheduled for 2 p.m. January 3rd at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. complications of hiatal hernia to your good health for Saturday. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm having a total knee replacement operation, and I'm concerned that I have a very large hiatal hernia, and when lying completely flat, I feel the hernia moving higher up my esophagus. At home, I have the head of my bed raised up about 6 inches, and that helps me tremendously. For my operation, the bed will be completely flat for several hours in preparation, during surgery, and in recovery. Should I be worried that there would be complications while lying flat for that long? Dr. Roach writes, the hiatus of the diaphragm is a hole, a normal structure that allows the esophagus to go from the chest into the abdomen so your food can go into the stomach. In people with the most common form of hiatal hernia, called a sliding hiatal hernia, the hole has become large enough that the top of the stomach can drift up into the chest where it doesn't belong. This often is asymptomatic, but can make reflux symptoms worse. Sliding hiatal hernias, more than 95% of hiatal hernias are this type, where the stomach can move up and down through the hiatus, are not dangerous. During the operation, the top of the stomach may indeed migrate into the chest, but it is very unlikely to cause you any problems.
Couples name game about to welcome a new player. Dear Abby, our daughter has been married for 3 years to a wonderful guy she dated for 10 years and loves dearly. Because she doesn't like his last name, she chose to maintain her maiden name. He understood this soon after they started dating. She is now 3 months pregnant and facing a dilemma about what to name their child. She's adamant that a hyphenated name is unacceptable. They have tentatively discussed a complete name change for themselves and the child. Her husband was adopted, and he feels there's no reason his surname must be carried on. He's okay with keeping his last name, but would consider a new one if she suggests something he likes. The problem is, she hasn't been able to come up with one he likes. We're concerned this issue will drag on without being settled until our grandchild arrives. We recently offered limited advice, hoping they could work this out between themselves. I believe her husband is entitled to keep his name, and she as well, but I'm against the child carrying only her name. Any suggestions you could provide to help resolve this would be appreciated before our grandchild is born nameless. Signed, Family Dilemma in Texas. Dear family, my suggestion is that, as helpful as you might wish to be, this is something your daughter and son-in-law must work out by themselves. What's in a name is plenty, and because this dilemma is emotionally loaded, you should stay out of it. Dear Abby, I'm undergoing chemoimmunotherapy for cancer every 3 weeks. For quite some time now, my husband has been going out most days from 12:30 to 3:30 p.m. He does not say where he's going, and when he comes home, he says hardly a word. He's angry with me for the least little thing, and being around him gets very unpleasant because he shouts and throws things around. I need to know what's going on, why, and if it's innocent, because he won't say where he's going and for what purpose. Am I justified in being upset and distressed about this? I'm at a point in my life where I need support. I think we both should be more concerned with making our future enjoyable and peaceful. How should I approach him about this without incurring more anger and putting myself in a worse situation than I'm already in? I don't want to accuse him of anything, but I want to know the truth, however hard it may be. I would appreciate any guidance you can give me. Signed, Suspicious in New York. Dear Suspicious, has this been going on since you were diagnosed, or do your husband's absences predate it? Because he becomes angry and defensive when you ask what's going on, stop trying to confront him. Your husband may be angry with you for getting cancer, be incapable of giving emotional support, or be stressed to the max and need private time to decompress. Or he may be cheating. If you can afford it, hire a private detective to provide the information you need. I'm so sorry for your pain. At a time like this, the last thing you need was additional worry.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.